Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.
Good afternoon and welcome to Engage for Success Radio show number 535, the latest Engage for Success engagement survey. We're going to be talking about the initial findings from the 2023 survey. I'm Jo Dodds, your host for today. I'm an engagement consultant working within the Engage for Success core team. The Engage for Success movement is an inclusive movement committed to the idea that there is a better way to work by releasing more of the capability and potential of people at work. We spread the word about employee engagement and shine a light on good practice, inspiring people and workplaces to thrive. And we're widely supported across the UK, involving the public, private and third sectors. If you go to our website, engageforsuccess.org, you can use the link at the bottom of the page to join our newsletter list, and all our social media links are there too. My guests today are Dr. Sarah Pass, who's Senior Lecturer in HRM at Nottingham Business School, and James Court-Smith, Data Scientist and Director at Stille Limited. And both are Engage for Success Advisory Board members, amongst other things. You both do lots of volunteering for the movement, so we won't list it all out, but you're very involved. So great to have you with me today. Let's start by getting you to each introduce yourself, and you can give your long list of things that you do, and then we'll talk a bit about the background to the survey and go from there. So Sarah, did you want to start?
Yeah, can do. I work at Nottingham Business School, Nottingham Trent University, but I spend a lot of my time working with all the fabulous people at Engage for Success, doing lots of different things from different thought and action groups around, for example, line managers, engagement champions. I chair the East Midlands Area Network, so I get to meet a lot of people at lots of different events, which is great. And then also work closely with David and Nita and James on a variety of different projects, including the national survey.
Lovely, thank you. And James?
Thanks, Jo. Yes, I'm a data scientist, as you said, background in operations research and survey research. And so I use data from all different sources and combine them all. About half of my work involves engagement data. And yeah, I've been a passionate supporter of the movement since the start. So yeah, really pleased to be talking again.
Brilliant, lovely. So let's start by talking about the background to the survey. It's not our first, but it's developed on since the first. So tell us about that.
Let's start, James.
Yeah.
Back in 2022, we were obviously coming out of the pandemic and we were doing lots of different events and talking about all the different activities that organisations did. And one of the questions that kept coming up was questions around both what is a, you know, what is good levels of engagement, what were levels of engagement in the UK, but also this trying to understand how all this radical change that happened because of the pandemic, what kind of impact it had on engagement levels. So with funding from Engage for Success and Nottingham Business School, and with support from Stille, we conducted a survey to try and explore what organisations were doing, and also to look at some kind of benchmark and development of an index to try and measure engagement. So that was back in 2022, we've been in a fantastic position to continue with the research on an annual basis.
Lovely. James, did you want to add anything to that?
No, that's a great overview. I guess what we found in that first piece really was by asking people to reflect back on how engaged they were before the pandemic and during, and then now at the time in 22, which was post-pandemic, was the major impact that it had had on employee engagement, with a drop of about 11% during the pandemic, and then recovering only 3% of those 11%. So it left us about 8% below the pre-pandemic levels. The introduction of the index, the EFS engagement index, was important to us. But our goal at the time was just to get a good enough measure of engagement. So something that particularly smaller organizations might use if they didn't already have a model that was in place. So we were able to do that as well, to get the overview, the current level back then, and have been able to since look at how that's moving, how that's trending.
And How did we do the research? Because I know it's changed slightly in terms of sort of numbers and so on, but the thing that's intrigued me all along, and you're the data scientist, James, is how many people we need to survey in order to get a representative sample and all that sort of thing. Perhaps you could just give us a little bit of an insight to that.
Sure. Well, in the first round, we had just under 1,000. That was for the 22 research, but then we've been able to expand in the most recent wave. So our fieldwork was actually in December. So it's our 2023 results that we're talking about. And we have over 3,000 in a representative sample of the UK working population. So really robust, really reliable results. And it allows us to break out results by sector, by size of organization. And to look at a lot more detail than we were able to, in addition to the fact that we no longer had to use up half of our survey with questions about the pandemic. Obviously, that
Yeah.
had moved on, so we were able to explore lots and lots of other areas, which are going to be key features in the report.
Yeah,
I think a
and I
good
guess one of
example.
the interesting things being that we're surveying people, not within an organization. So a lot of surveys that we hear about have been done by a particular organization about their employees, and not, this is a bit different, isn't it, Sarah?
Yeah, I was about to say that actually, that so we used a survey platform called Prolific. Very, very similar to YouGov, which is another platform that many different organisations and the government use to obviously survey. So independent people, like you say, there, so they may be or may experiencing engagement initiatives in their organisation. They may not be, but it's very sort of independent. Yes, they get paid to complete the survey, so there's always a slight bias to any of it. But otherwise, it's individual perspectives on engagement and their understanding of and experiences of work.
So we're going to use the rest of the show to explore some of the initial findings. And I've seen you speak on this at least a couple of times already. And what's interesting, as you say, with all the different questions that we're able to ask this time, you're able to sort of I was going to say spin. That's not the right word, is it? You're able to, what's the word? But no,
Delve
filter,
deeper,
filter.
delve deeper into the data because we've got a much bigger sample.
Yeah, but also
Yeah.
filter the response to the audience. So I saw you talking about well-being at one of the conferences that we're at, and you've talked to in it with a sort of different perspective recently as well. So I guess you've got, as you say, a broad amount of information that we can share. So we're going to be talking sort of initial findings, but there'll be other events that people can attend, and they'll obviously be able to read the report and so on. But I guess the first question probably is, has engagement improved since the first survey?
We'd love to say that it has. Unfortunately, it hasn't. So looking at our index, we're still at 62%. So where there might have been some slight variations across different types of areas, they all sort of measure the same. So there's been no major movements, there's been no insignificant change, which isn't un unexpected. Surveys don't tend to dramatically change year on year, but given we're so far behind what we were before the pandemic, I really would have hoped for some sort of movement as we've kind of come out of it now and restrictions have all eased. But no, it's still very much a sort of stagnating.
So you mentioned the engagement index and the 62%. How does that get made up? What is the engagement index?
So we just combined three questions: overall satisfaction with the company as a place to work, likelihood to recommend the company as a place to work, and I plan to be working here in 2 or 3 years' time, so a loyalty measure. We use the most common response scale, so a 5-point Likert response scale, and then we take everybody's answer. We work out the average, just the straight average, so everyone's response is counted equally. And then we just convert that to a percentage to make it a bit more intuitive. So the 62% is really the mean score, the average of the response to those three questions. But it's quite important to us because it's reflecting everyone's response fairly and reflecting the response they actually gave. Sometimes people focus on the percentage of positive responses, and there are lots of problems with that. It just really doesn't align with employee voice from my perspective. And one of the problems with it is that if I answer with a one or a two or a three, I'm just counted as not positive. So that is the reporting overriding the answer I actually gave with that frame of we just care about whether it's positive or not. So yeah, it's just the average of those three questions was the simpler answer to your question.
And at the risk of James taking over this podcast, Sarah, I feel I should ask you to explain about the very exciting piece of news for this one about the how it compares to other surveys, because that is really interesting.
Yeah, so
Perhaps.
yeah, sorry, James. So James
You can come in in a minute,
is very passionate about the indices and the index,
Sarah.
and understandably, because I think certainly from the first one, as we mentioned, it was just about having a look at the data to see if there was a good enough measure. So many organizations don't have the resources for some to be able to pay teams or consultants to come in or have their own internal team to measure engagement. And so it was something that was just simple, straightforward. As James uses a fantastic example of that team leader just handing out a load of post-it notes and working it out that way. You don't even need, tech to do it. So that was the sort of aim behind it. And with not having to ask so many questions about the pandemic this time, it gave us the ability to ask so many different questions. I mean, you mentioned before, Joe, we spoke a bit about well-being, and we've got so many different areas to talk about. And one of them was that looking at all the different indices. So we compared it against the civil service engagement indices, the NHS index, sorry, and the NHS index, and also academic indexes as well. And we're delighted to see that our good enough measure certainly, is more than good enough. It very well robustly stands up to all the other ones.
Go on, James. What's the statistical comparison?
Aha, good to say. Well, they're very highly correlated. There are lots of different ways in which we can show it, but for me, the real takeaway is hugely important, and not just to myself, to many of us in the movement, because it supports the idea that engagement is an umbrella term, and that it doesn't really matter which engagement model you pick. More important thing is to pick one and then to work with it, so to properly put effort behind using it to make improvements. And so the kind of thing that is accessible and that we're going to be including in the report would be we can look at the same issue or the same topic from any of the four different indices, ours being one, the NHS being another, the civil service, the Utrecht scale, and all four of them give you the same conclusion. They allow you to spot the same thing and arrive at the same outcome. So it really doesn't matter which one you pick. As Sarah's been mentioning, lots of particularly smaller organizations don't survey. It probably doesn't make sense for them to be doing that. In addition to having good validation now for our EFS index, we've also got proper measurement. We even have micro organizations, organizations smaller than 25 people, where we've got now an accurate measure of how engagement stands.
So let's get to what we found out. What headlines stand out for you?
Well, I think because we were able to look at so many different areas, there are so many different headlines, but I think there's a few that kind of stick out to us a bit more, mainly because there are areas we weren't able to delve into as deeply in the first survey. So differences around individual experiences, organizations, and practices. To take the first one of those in terms of practices, things like hybrid working. I mean, it's highly topical. And so we were very keen to explore it and to see, initially to see how many people were experiencing either support for hybrid working or being mandated into the office. But then, as James said, being able to use the engagement index, we were able to compare those kind of responses. So we could see quite easily, and it's quite starkly, that those that are supported to work in, their organizations support hybrid working have dramatically higher levels of engagement than those that are mandated back into the office full time.
That's really interesting, isn't it? With all, as you say, all the press and all the sort of opinions and some of the, as you say, the mandating back into the office that's being explained away by how important it is to engage people and that sort of thing. And then to find it's not strictly true.
We asked our questions as well around hybrid in terms of preferences of location of people to work, and there was this, understanding that it depends on the job you're doing, it depends on the kind of tasks that are needed, and how you can collaborate. And so there's lots of different variations, but it is this overarching, you know, the support of the organization to work in a hybrid type of way. That's making a big difference. And like you say, there's lots of organizations mandating or suggesting coming back in 1 or 2 days a week. We're also asking for that as well. And there's that definite step between those that are saying, you know, you have to be back into work full time, then the lowest engagement, then a slight improvement for those that are suggesting dash mandating 1 or 2 days, although they're quite similar, and then this big jump up to those that are being supported to work in a hybrid way. And I think the terms of the practices are very keen on, or certainly noticed, was around champions, engagement champion networks. So Engage for Success have an engagement champion tag, and we've worked with quite a few different organizations on their networks to help them develop and grow. So we added a question to explore how common they were. And again, it was really interesting to see that actually organizations that had their champion networks again had dramatically higher levels of engagement.
Lovely, thank you. James, what about some standouts for you?
Oh, those two definitely stood out. I guess I would probably highlight some around the differences in individual experience. So obviously we're able to look into gender and age group and ethnicity and all of the standard pieces and have results for all of that in the report. But what stood out for me were two really. One being long-term health conditions. So we asked about mental or physical conditions lasting over a year, and more than one fifth, more than 20% of the respondents said that they have such a condition, and their experience is dramatically worse. So their engagement is significantly lower than everybody else, and because that's between a fifth and a quarter of the workforce, that one really stands out for me. And the second would be around sexuality, where we found that about 10% of our respondents identified as LGBTQ plus, and they also are reporting a much worse experience, so lower employee engagement than everybody else. So those two would stand out. And as Sarah's intimated, we have measures of well-being, measures of manageable stress, and even presenteeism. So we ask whether people have worked when they were ill and whether it was due to a pressure from managers, lots and lots of detail. But yeah, the headlines for me would be those two: health conditions and LGBTQ plus.
I think in
So,
addition to the individual, as James said, you know, we had all those different measures. We're also able to look at different sector. So I think with the first survey, when we went out and talked to people, you know, you got a lot of people going, well, you know, in the private sector we have this, or the public sector, you know, is the variations, which was another reason why we were keen to have a look at the civil service and the NHS indexes to kind of help with some of those comparisons. And there are differences again in terms of the data. Given, you know, all the press, it's not a big surprise to people, I'm sure, to see that engagement levels are lower in the public sector. But also that there's differences in engagement levels in terms of organisational size as well. So there's really some key areas that we can look at and develop further.
So we said that the engagement index hadn't changed, particularly the engagement hasn't changed between the two surveys. What are the sort of consistent messages are there? Are there things that we can sort of draw out from that, the fact that things haven't changed?
That's a good question. I mean, I guess we wouldn't normally expect a big jump from one year to the next in a measure like this at the overall country level. But as Sarah outlined, I think because the drop during the pandemic was so big and that we'd only recovered about a third of it by the time we came out, that's why I think so many of us were hoping to see some big improvements. And I'm not sure. It's possible that hybrids working itself through or any of these other issues that are there are contributing to holding things back. What we can say is that the engagement measure is the same for 2023 as it was in 22. And we had also kept asking our self-rating questions that we'd used to explore the pandemic itself. And one of those goes up a tiny bit, the other one goes down a tiny bit, and they sort of cancel each other out. So that's pretty good corroboration. And there's lots of outside sort of third-party research out there too that seems to be confirming a similar message that we do seem to be stagnating.
And I think whilst obviously that kind of feels a bit depressing, I mean there's so much going on that is quite depressing. When we look at the data and we could see it with the first one, but even more so with the bigger sample, the second one, is these big variations in engagement levels. So the 62% is the average. But if you were to, when we start looking at the different types of things organizations offer, the different activities that organizations do, you can see huge variations between the two. So certainly for the 2022 one, we were just trying to understand what organizations were doing. We were asking them things like, were your organization offering the sort of online social activities, these fitness classes online and the online social drinking and baking and e-learning and everything else. And again, just to kind of get a picture. But we were able to see when looking at the data that certain things grouped together, and those groupings were quite natural in terms of meeting methods, comms methods, employee involvement methods, learning and development methods, and different types of engagement methods and voice methods, and they actually influenced levels of engagement. So this time we looked at it more purposely, at what are the kind of the general kind of different practices organizations offer. So for example, around well-being, employee assistance programs, gym memberships, counseling, all those different kind of packages. And the same with communication methods from your everyday emails to so much more interesting and developed type of methods of communication. And that is consistent. We found that actually when you organizations that basically do more, have higher levels of engagement, by giving that perception of that showing that you're actually interested in your employees, you're trying to help them develop, trying to help them grow, then your engagement levels are not only going to be higher than the average, but as we saw with the pandemic data, your resilience to any kind of things like a pandemic or things happening shows that your engagement just drops slightly and is more likely to rebound as well. So there's huge variations in what organizations do, but an important point to make of those activities, they don't have to be really expensive. They don't have to, so for organizations that don't have those resources at hand, it's not a case of, well, we can't possibly do those. That's just for the big organizations or the private organizations. These things can be, internal training, different forms of internal communication methods. It's about doing things that fit your organization, but offering them in different types of ways to really get down to that individual. Some of us like to check emails, others prefer online activities. It's fitting all those different kind of methods, really made a difference.
So, how do you see people using the report from the survey sort of moving forwards? You've obviously just given a load of examples of ideas that organizations can use. What will they be getting? What's the report consist of? And what can they do with it?
Well, I think one of the things running throughout the whole report is also questions we had around the importance of the people issues. And I think that's one of the things that's consistent across both surveys. Offering these activities, offering all the different practices, looking after your employees, ensuring that when you make those big strategic decisions or those managerial day-to-day decisions, that you're thinking about the people in your organization and at the same level as making those, sort of harder decisions. And we asked those kind of questions as well, and we showed there was a huge variation in, and so people who felt that their senior leaders really thought about those the people issues when making those big strategic decisions, and also their managers who thought about the people issues and the day-to-day decisions. Again, their engagement levels were much, much higher, talking 77% as opposed to the national average of 62. So it's ensuring that organizations start to think about those things, that the soft people issues aren't something that comes out on the sunshine days. Actually, it's the rainy days that you really need to be focusing on these things to ensure good engagement. And then I think there's lots of different elements as well, takeaways. I think the emphasis is on sort of as James is always talking about, the sort of the drivers of engagement. You know, what are the things that actually can we do about it? And I think many of our questions that we looked at wanted to just move away from, you know, just a measurement of, to actually give information of what other things organizations can do to make a difference. For example, the Engagement Champion Networks are a good example. You know, they showed a huge improvement in engagement, if you have one. But then, you know, also about looking at how can you develop one, and we can connect into so many of the resources on the Engage Success website, and connect all those different activities.
Yeah, I agree. And Sarah described earlier how the various offerings or packages and initiatives, things like methods for meeting, for developing, for supporting well-being. So in the report, we also look at each one of them and the impact that it has on engagement. So, you know, if you needed to pick one from a series, then that might not be a bad reference point. But overall, it really is a question of offering several options. And we think really that that's because what that does is it allows every employee or the largest number of them to find one of those options that works for them. So we're doing both. We're reporting on which of the initiatives or offerings seem to have the biggest impact, but also acknowledging the fact that it's often the breadth of the offerings or the breadth of the opportunities that are there. And then just one small build on the people issues piece. I think the other piece for me that's really important is that it's very, very achievable. Sarah mentioned the 77 instead of 62 as you know, dramatically higher engagement. All that we need to get to that 77 is for people to be able to at least agree. They don't have to strongly agree. They just have to be able to at least agree that both leaders making big strategic decisions and managers making the day-to-day decisions sufficiently take the people issues like engagement, culture, and well-being into account of this, that will prioritize them sufficiently. At the moment, two-fifths of our UK workforce already at least agrees with both of those questions. So it's very, very achievable, as you know, 40% pretty much of the workforce. And for them, engagement is at 77. For everybody else, for people who can't at least agree to both of those questions, slightly over half the UK population, it's 55. So the potential for huge improvements is very, very clear. And obviously, taking the people issues into consideration means not just a you know, siloed focus on one people policy, but a broad approach to it and integrating them in other decision making and prioritizing them enough. So, yeah, I think just very, very stark difference, huge, huge difference between those two.
So we're coming towards the end of the show. What are the sort of next steps? You've got an event, I think, next week.
Yeah, we've got lots of activities. So we have the online events next week with the IPA. So that's a Zoom event where we'll be able to actually show the data. Obviously, we can't on a radio show, and there'll be opportunities for questions. We're speaking at the Engagement Summit as well. We've got the report coming out, and lots of different things. So I say, with the survey is so big, there's so many different aspects of it, we're kind of slicing it to go to different activities.
Brilliant, lovely. Well, thank you so much for joining me and giving us a bit of an initial view on what's there. People who are listening, if they're not on the mailing list, then I suggest you go to our website and sign up so that you get to hear first all the news about the report as we release it. Do we know when it's being released officially? Available on the
Soon.
website? Soon. Coming
Great
to
answer.
I know you soon.
Soon.
Excellent, brilliant. So thank you, Sarah. Thank you, James.
No, thanks very much, Joe.
Thanks, Joe.
And just let you ne know, next week, Joan Moffat will be back, and she's talking with Yossi Amram, who's author of Spiritually Intelligent Leadership: How to Inspire to Be Inspired. And they're talking about how we begin to awaken our spiritual intelligence.
Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.